Hey, Kyle and listeners, Tyler Garwood here. I'm in the bottom of the Grand Canyon. Just took a swim in the Colorado right by Bright Angel Campground. I'm going to hike out tomorrow. My partner and I are traveling from the Grand Canyon over to Sequoia, Yosemite, the Redwoods, and then back up to Washington. And plan on making a bunch of cool stops on the way. If you have any listeners out there that are along that way, feel free to contact me. My Instagram handle is Tyler_Garwood, and I'd love to meet up and hear from anyone that listens to the podcast. Cheers.
Well, that sounds like an exciting adventure, Tyler Garwood. And once again, his Instagram handle is Tyler_Garwood. So if you're going to be in any of those areas, hit him up for a beer. I can attest that cool fucking people listen to this podcast, and I want more of you to meet each other. And if you want to send a little voice memo, a beacon that will be sent out into this podcast universe, just send me a voice memo on your phone. Try and keep it under a minute. Let me know who you are, where you're listening from, and include your Instagram handle. Maybe someone will hit you up, and then you'll become best friends, and you'll start a venture together based on your shared love of surfing and washing cats. Humanely, of course. All right. This episode is made possible by the Nell Newman Foundation. They support bold, iconoclastic work around the world. And in this episode, we get to highlight one of my favorite organizations, Save the Waves. Here is their director, Nick Strong-Svetich.
Hey, Kyle. It's Nick here from Save the Waves. I am right outside of your house. But you don't seem to be home, so this is going to be less funny maybe than it was. Again, I wanted to just let your listeners know a little bit about what Save the Waves does. We are here squarely to protect surf ecosystems around the globe. And we have set a really big target for ourselves, which is to protect 1,000 of these places by 2030. 1,000. 1,000 surf spots. And one of the pieces of good news that we've had recently is with our partners down in Chile, we were able to create a new sanctuary around 7 particular waves, one of which includes one close to your heart, Puerto Cillo. So we've got lots of good news unrolling, and people can get on board and check us out at savethewaves.org. And a huge thank you to the Nell Newman Foundation for supporting both of us.
You! People doing good work. If you want to get involved with Save the Waves, check them out at savethewaves.org. And once again, thank you to the Nell Newman Foundation for supporting such amazing work. This episode is also made possible by RPM Training Company. RPM Training is a NorCal-based active lifestyle brand founded in the idea that legit, purposeful, functional training is the foundation of a truly full, adventurous life. They're based close to Santa Cruz and Los Gatos, and I used their products far long before they sponsored this podcast. They make the best damn jump ropes in the world. They make comfy clothes, great for working out, and right now you can head over to rpmtraining.com. Kit yourself out with fitness gear. Get it in your backyard. Get it in your front yard. Get it in your driveway. Just whatever you can do, get what you need to make it easy to say yes to a workout. All right? And right now, you can go to rpmtraining.com, get 10% off everything by typing in the code name Kyle10. That's rpmtraining.com. Type in the code name Kyle10 for 10% off Erdang. And finally, thank you to Santa Cruz Medicinals. You knew where this was going, you regular listeners. This is going to Barbarian Days, which is the November book on our monthly book club. Do you like reading? Do you think reading is sexy? Do you believe that the world would be a better place if people read more words per day? I certainly do. And if you want to get more reading in your day, you can head over to my website, kyle.surf/bookclub, and get our November book, Barbarian Days, along with some Santa Cruz Medicinal CBD tincture. The way it works is every month I send you a book that I love along with Santa Cruz Medicinal CBD tincture, which I use after workouts and to help me with deep sleep. That's kyle.surf/bookclub. And if you think, hey, reading's stupid, it's stupid, I just want CBD, Well, you don't need to get my book. You can go to santacruzmedicinals.com. Check out all their products, from CBD clay masks, nootropics, to coconut oil for massages or cooking, whatever you like to do. You can get 10% off all of that by typing in the code name Kyle10. That's scmedicinals.com. Type in the code name Kyle10 and relax, everyone. Wow, we made it through those fast. I'm hot. I'm sweaty. I'm down in Baja, and I just recorded a podcast with Kolohe and Dino. Kolohe and Dino is one of the best surfers in the world. He is from Santa Clemente, California. He began to surf when he was 10 years old, and he holds the record for the most National Scholastic Surfing Association championships won by a male competitor. He won both the ASP Six-Star Quicksilver Brazil Open of Surfing and the Vans Pier Classic World Tour events in 2011. And this past year on the World Tour, he finished fifth. He is a top five surfer in the world. And in this interview, we get into what his days are like. What's his life like? This dude, I guarantee you, this dude surfs more than anyone listening to this podcast. And he surfs better than all of us, too. So how do you get there? I was really impressed by him. I think that after all of his success, he has remained humble, cool, and curious. I enjoyed talking to him. I certainly hope you do, too. So please welcome to the show, Kolohe and Dino. All right, let's do it. Yeah. We're talking about how America's a trip.
Yeah, so yeah, it's a trip because I whenever I go Midwest, it's pretty you know, I just go snowboarding or whatever quickly, and I'm like, oh, I want to get back in surfing.
Where do you go?
I went to Jackson Hole, Wyoming for my honeymoon.
I was just there.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I heard all these places are actually better in the summer than the winter because of the fishing and the...
There's a lot of fly fishing in Jackson Hole. The weather is really beautiful. There's a lot of good backpacking around all the Tetons, but they get those crazy winter storms, so it's more known as a snow community.
Yeah, and... Yeah, it's just weird. I just always have a hard time when I'm like not surfing for so long. Like I just like, you know, gotta get in the water.
Yeah.
So
have you been getting into snowboarding?
We've done a snowboard trip each year for a while. We went to Bend, Oregon twice. We went to Nelson, Revelstoke, Whistler, Jackson Hole, Mammoth. So yeah, I don't know. It's usually like the way the tour was is that it would end kind of prime time for like like a New Year's snowboard trip, so we did that for a while, but now the way that it's supposed to be ran is that it's gonna like the off season is gonna be like around August and stuff. So
the pipe contest ends at the beginning of December, right? At least that's how it was.
Yeah, it ends on the 20th, or the waiting period, that's the last day of the waiting period.
Is December 20th.
Yeah.
Okay. So when that's finished, you're not surfing again in a jersey until March on the Gold Coast. Is that right?
That's usually how it is, March or April.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think the way, you know, if there was no, like, pandemic or whatever, it would be, I think, like, that world title event they want to have, I think is September, the middle of September, I want to say.
Huh.
Yeah, and then it will start back up at Pipe in January or December. They wanted to have it, so
Pipe would be the first event of the year.
Yeah.
And where would be the last?
Chopu, mid-end of August, and then they have the world title event or whatever, you know, that playoff thing they want to do.
Tell me about this.
Have you heard of it at all?
I have, but I just, dude, it's there's a pandemic happening.
Yeah, it changes
there's a lot changing
every day. Yeah. Yeah, so basically they have like the world tour, and then the top five from the rankings would go to like an event, and then that would decide the world title.
Got it. So it'd just be five surfers.
Yeah, five men and five women, obviously.
Okay, right. Yeah. And then do you know how they would do those heat structures?
Yeah, so it'd be like four and five would surf against each other, and then the winner of that would go against three, and then the winner of that would go against two, and the winner of that would go against one. And then they would, I think they wanted to have a best of three. So if you were like,
whoa. Oh, wait, so it would be five men in jerseys at the same time, all surfing against each other?
No, man on man.
Man on man.
So four and five would go against each other.
Oh, right. Oh, number four and number five. Got it.
They would advance. And then the final thing, I think best of three. So if you were fifth or fourth and ended up winning the title, you'd have to surf like, I think it was like seven heats in one day.
Or no,
I don't know the math, but.
Right. But if you're going heats. Into that final event at ranked first, you would have to surf less heats.
Yeah. You just have to do the best of three or whatever.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. It's kind of cool. I don't think really like the best surfer on one day necessarily deserves the world title, but the five guys that are in that event, it's going to be huge for them. So,
right. Yeah. Do you feel like it would be more fair if you did more heats in a best of three format? Like if you're surfing against a guy in a heat, how often do you feel like, fuck, I could beat that guy, but the waves just didn't come to me. And if you gave me two more shots, I guarantee you I could beat him.
I never really think that. I haven't thought about that. Yeah. I think they used to do that in the 80s where they would like come in and something, and then they announce who won and they like paddle back out or some trippy stuff went down early days. But yeah, I mean, that's never even crossed my mind. So I don't know. I mean, heats are weird.
Super weird.
You don't know ever.
Right.
Yeah.
And has it changed? Has the format changed since you got on tour? You got on tour in 2015?
2012. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Long in the tooth.
You got on when you were like 17, right?
Yeah. My first event, I was 17. Yeah.
And has the format changed a lot since you've been on tour?
I think it's the same amount of guys. It has changed a little bit with like the loser rounds and then like no loser round and then like two losers rounds. And like, and now it's like, if you get third, then you're in the loser round, or you say you have to win the heat.
Right.
So, it's kind of bounced around a little bit. It's been a little bit of a trial and error sort of thing, but,
it's hard to figure out.
Yeah, you got to be on the pulse for sure.
It seems like it.
Yeah.
Do you, like, when they introduce something new to all you guys, do they round you up and is it like a PowerPoint presentation, or do you guys all get like an email about how the new formatting is going to work? How do the judges and the people who are actually figuring out the criteria of the competition communicate that to the athletes?
Well, I mean, the bottom line is they're trying to make money. So they're trying to shorten it up and make it watchable on TV, like all that sort of stuff. So the judges don't necessarily have much to do with that part of it. It's more the big wigs kind of saying like, hey, if we get better waves, more people will watch it. So let's, you know, maximize the swell, all that sort of stuff. So, it's been, some of it is like, they just kind of like put it on our plate and we have to deal with it. And then some of it is talked through a little bit.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And when you go into an event, do you ever communicate with the judges? Do they ever say, this is how we're scoring? Or is it all pretty intuitive? Like, you know what they're going to be scoring well on, and there's no real confusion about that.
With the scoring, I mean, a place like Chopu, it's pretty like straightforward. You just like, get deep in the barrel.
Yeah. Floaters all day at float.
Yeah. Cutties. Yeah, but a place like, I mean, the Wave Ranch has probably been the hardest place to figure out with what they like. So a place like that, just because like the wave's so long and everyone has their own personality they like to express on the wave. So yeah, I don't know. It's been tricky for sure. And you just try to, for me, I just try to like watch and see what they're liking. But that can work not in your favor either. So I don't know.
How so?
Well, sometimes if you like, I guess if you watch, you get competitive with like other people's scores and maybe you get jealous because you're competitive, or maybe you think they scored his wave higher because they like him more than you, or some just, you know,
right.
Petty little kid stuff.
Take your eye off the ball.
Yeah. Whereas I feel like I actually do my best when I'm just worried about myself and going out and surfing good.
Huh. That's interesting. And was that something, a learned skill since you got on tour when you were 17?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's definitely harder to, like, watch all day or something, you know, it kind of drains you and you kind of like, oh, they scored that and they scored that, so I should go out there and do this. Like, you know, I just, as I got older and I guess more wise, I got to,
You're good.
Are we good?
Yeah. I was hearing something. What is that? It's like a woodpecker.
I don't know.
We're good. It's a bird.
Yeah, it's a bird.
Fucking birds. For some reason, it's like having a bird adds aesthetic to a podcast, but if it was like a faraway dump truck or something.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, we're out in nature, nature of San Clemente.
I know, right? Orange County nature. Yeah, so I guess it's just as I got a little bit more wise, I guess, and knew myself more, I got to figure out what works and what doesn't work for me.
Hmm.
So,
yeah. You know, I heard an interview that you gave, a while back about how saying how like the best guys don't live and die by their heats.
Yeah.
You remember saying that?
Yeah. Yeah. I still believe it. So
yeah.
Sounds like something I'd say.
Do you remember like any specific instance when that lesson, integrated into your mind?
Not necessarily. I watch a lot of baseball, and I think there's a lot of baseball with surfing analogies.
Congratulations. I hear that your team's doing well.
Yeah, they won. I was really stoked. So it was rad for Kershaw. I was a big Kershaw fan, so it's like a emotional moment for him.
Yeah, and for you as well.
No, for me and him and you know, us, me and Kershaw. Yeah. Kershaw and I. I think just like baseball, it's like whoever deals with failure the best, because you know, a 300 hitter is, you know, striking out or not getting on base 7 out of 10 times. So and I think surfing has a lot to do with that. It's kind of like you gotta deal with the cards that you get, and that's the way it is. You know, the ocean could go flat, whatever, you know. Surfing's weird because you could surf a heat and you make one mistake and you lose, or you make, you know, the next week you make 10 and you win. So yeah. And also like some of the events I've done the best, like I was having terrible free surfs and I was, you know, half injured and not free surfing or whatever, you know, and then other times I feel great and then I just do bad. So yeah, I think just learning how to deal with those losses and learning how to just kind of stay even the whole time it's been a really hard thing for me. So maybe, you know, people always, what's it called? Like not reflect, but, they project things that they're most insecure about. So I think one thing that I'm like, I run so hot, so passionate, and like try so hard that I'm always trying to like stay even keeled. So it's like, that's definitely something I would say to like, not only to maybe to help someone or to say it to someone, but just to remind myself to do that too.
Isn't it crazy how whatever discipline you get into, you learn about yourself through that discipline?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Kolohe as a soul is learning about himself as the body through the experience of riding a wave in competition.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. It's weird because I always compare also too. I'm always like, are a lot of other people, competitors going through this stuff? Or like, seems like Medina just rolls out and wins all the time. Like, yeah. So I don't know. I guess maybe I'm a little bit of more of a deeper thinker and like nothing really gets past me. So, but yeah, it's been great to learn about myself.
Have you, like one thing that people say about Slater is that he has been able to use both ups and downs in his life to win.
Uh-huh.
Right. Where if he's doing really good in his life, like he'll be winning, and then there'll be a time when he's like struggling, but he'll use that kind of anger to focus.
Yeah.
Have you found that because you naturally will have these kinds of peaks and valleys, you can use both to your advantage? Like, do you ever get pissed off and do really well?
Sometimes, but I think that's maybe, you know, not how I should go about myself. Like, I think sometimes if you think that, then you're kind of, sometimes you're like, oh, well, you know, that one time I was really pissed off and I surfed great that day or something. And, Yeah, I don't know. That's not me.
It's like comedians who are afraid to have a happy life because they're terrified that they won't be funny anymore.
You know? Yeah. They're like,
if my life becomes too stable and I have like a good marriage and a child, then I'll lose my edge.
Yeah. I don't know. I think one thing that I've also learned by watching a lot of baseball is that a lot of these guys, baseball means a lot, but it's not everything to them. And I was like, that's really been cool for me because I think before you're a surfer or a competitor, you're also a human being. So being happy is a big part of my life.
Yeah. It's cool that you have that perspective given just how much time you're spending surfing and how much of your mind has been focused on wave riding since you were a little kid.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, I'm at the spot where it's pretty easy for me just to paddle. Like I have a perspective on how good my life is. So I have a lot of gratitude towards that. And it's easy for me to work hard and, you know, it's just what I do and it's fun now. So,
right.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. When I was younger, I was very like stuck in my own way. Stuck in the mud or in my own way, just like kind of losing a lot and trying really hard, but then just like really angsty and a lot of anxiety and insecurities and stuff. But now I feel calm and relaxed and, you know, excited for everything.
That's great. I have been getting more into meditation over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And one thing they talk about in meditation is to be able to notice the stories in your own mind, because even if you're not aware of them, all day long you're telling some kind of story about this other person that fucking slided you and they burned you, and that means that they are a horrible person and they have always hated you, or you know, you have a story about yourself.
Yeah.
And you can just get very wrapped up in it very quickly.
Yeah.
And to be able to step back and look at the story from a more almost journalistic perspective, like, I wonder if that's true.
Yeah.
Is a real superpower.
Yeah, for sure. And even stories that you tell yourself about, you know, how the greats did it, or just, yeah, stories all the time. You know, it can play tricks on you for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you, I think that that's really true, right? That when you're young and you're looking up to guys and it seems like they just have it all figured out and there's no problems, I think it can be pretty helpful to have conversations with those kinds of people and realize that virtually everyone is still dealing with that shit.
Yeah, totally.
But they've been able to kind of like dance with that darkness a little bit better and not let it consume them.
Yeah. Well, I think, yeah, the darkness thing is a whole nother thing, because, you know, you definitely have to go to, you know, just like you watch a UFC fighter or even like a Tom Brady or something, just go to that Darth Vader mode where they're just like yelling and screaming at their teammates, or, you know, beady eyed walking into the cage or something. So you definitely have to go there too to compete and, you know, want to rip your competitor's head off for that 30 minutes. But I don't know. I definitely don't want to live there because, like I said, I'm a human being before I'm a competitor. So
yeah, it's draining.
Yeah,
it's draining
exactly.
To do that. And do you, what are the other things that you've been super into? Baseball?
Yeah, obviously. Well, it was like a crazy sports week.
Yeah.
The last week it was like the World Series for the Dodgers. And then they had that Khabib fight, the UFC, which was like psycho sick.
Yeah.
I love Justin Gaethje. My dad really likes Khabib. But then after that fight, I was like, oh, I love Khabib too. And then he retired. So, and then after that, it was football Sunday. So I was like jet lag from the Maldives, just like sitting on the couch, just like,
who's your team?
Loving life.
You're a 49ers fan, right?
No, I used to be.
You used to be. Yeah, I remember you'd come up to Santa Cruz and hang with Nat. You guys are big Niners fans.
I was trying to get it in so I get a couple waves at the lane.
I think you're all right. Yeah. I mean, you can still get waves even though you're not a Niners fan.
No, but LA got a team, so I was I'm kind of more – I just really don't like the Browns. So that's it.
more than liking a team. Yeah. You just hate other ones.
Yeah. And then the Jets, Sam Darnold's from San Clemente. So we're friends. So I root for them, even though they're 0-6.
Are you friends with a lot of other athletes from different sports?
Not really. No, just Sam. He's from town. So we became friends and we hang out. So yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. I remember you'd come up to Santa Cruz pretty often when you were younger.
Yeah.
You take those road trips up there.
Yeah. I go up a lot just cause, Nat and I are good friends. So got a little buddy to hang out with and surf. And
did he go to Jackson Hole with you?
No, that was my honeymoon.
Oh, that was the honeymoon trip. Yeah.
Put on like 15 pounds.
Oh, wow.
Just I ate a bunch of food Saturday.
Really?
Yeah.
How long was the honeymoon?
Food was so good. It was like 10 days or something.
You put on 15 pounds?
I think so, yeah.
That's insane. Yeah. What?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's wild.
It was hard to get off, kind of. It was like 3 years ago, so it's gone. It's gone now.
Thankfully.
Yeah. But yeah, it was rad there. He went to Revelstoke with me.
To go snowboard.
The same trip, the same year, because I did a snowboard bachelor trip to Revelstoke.
That's fun.
Yeah, it was super fun.
Where is Revelstone?
Revelstoke.
It's, Revelstoke.
BC or something. It's kind of like in the middle of Canada.
Dope.
Yeah. It was pretty hardcore snowboarding. We went heliboarding. It was nuts.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, and then a couple of us, like Dylan Goodale and Michael Dunphy, it was their first time snowboarding, was that trip. So it was like their third day snowboarding ever.
They're like, all right, it's like being like, all right, I've never surfed. We're going to Tavarua.
Yeah. Or like toe-ins at Jaws or something, like small Jaws. It was like pretty hardcore, but yeah.
So was that that was your first time heliboarding?
Yeah. Have you done it?
No, I've never done it, but I just was... just actually yesterday hanging out with this woman named Elena Height, who's a pro. She was an Olympian pro snowboarder.
Uh-huh.
And I was asking her about heliboarding and she was like, it kind of ruins everything else.
Yeah. No, she's so right. Yeah. It's like, I guess it would be like doing step offs.
Yeah.
Or something. And you're
just like blown out of big barrels,
20 blowouts in 1 hour.
Yeah.
And then you're like, walk like you're like driving by looking at T-shirt and you're like
I think I'll watch the game today.
I think I'll just go home.
So do they all take you up in the same helicopter?
Yeah, so there's like I think there was 12 of us and we had 3 helicopters, so there's like 4 of you that can squeeze into one helicopter
and then they drop you off at the top.
So they like, I mean, the worst part about the day is like, okay, if an avalanche happens and you have to dig your buddy out, this is how you do it. Like, so basically you're like learning how to like save your best friend. They're like, you only have like X amount of minutes before they die. So like you do it quick, you know? And like, you know, like I said, it was only a couple of my friends, it was their third day snowboarding. They're just like, what the?
How bad do I really want this?
Yeah. But anyways, they pick you up and it's like, it's pretty like gnarly, like Armageddon, like they fully like come down, there's like snow flying everywhere. Yeah. And then they're like all right, and you like put your head down and they, you know, it's all like you gotta dig, like kind of pack in the snow, because you know, think about it, if the snow's like if it's like powder and it's pretty deep, which it was, they like land and then they just push through the powder, so the helicopter is like really really low.
It's dropping down.
Yeah,
it doesn't just stop on the fluffy powder.
Yeah, it's gnarly and we're just whoa. And then like they have the little like cage on the side of the helicopter, and then you get in, and then they
throw your snowboards in the cage.
Yeah,
hop in.
Well, they have like a guide. They kind of like hold your hand.
Okay,
and then then they're just like, you know, flying through these like valleys and stuff, and then they're like, okay, right there. Then they just like land on this like, you know, 10-foot wide thing where it's like one side's like
sheer cliff,
beyond vertical, and the other side is like just like perfect powder. And you're just like, whoa, like this is pretty gnarly. Like if you have like a fear of heights, it's not a recommended thing.
Was it easy to see where you needed to go down the mountain? One thing that this woman, Elena, said is that a sketchy aspect of it is that, you know, you're flying up and you can see your line, right? Like, okay, we're going to go down this way. But then you get to the top and you look down and it's a totally different scene.
Yeah.
So you're riding down and you're not always sure if you should be going left or if you should be going right, and you can get way off course if you're not careful.
Yeah. Well, there's a guide. There's like a, I think there might be two guides. No, there was one guide. And he was pretty like pretty on it. So he knew what he was doing. But well, I guess just me being like a layman snowboarder, it's hard because you kind of you're like looking. You're like, okay, like he's saying to go this way, but I can't see like that. Like I can't see where I'm going. You know, right. It'd be like taking off on a wave like behind a cliff or something. You're like, okay, like he's saying it's fine, but like I guess we'll just go. Yeah. You know. So yeah, but then it was he like knew our level perfectly, so we had a great time.
That's cool.
Yeah,
that's great, man. And did you guys just go in and find a good tour, or did you have some kind of hookup on it?
We got a little bit of a deal from a friend of mine, Andrew Mariner, and it was at Eagle Pass, I think. But yeah, we got kind of a good deal. I think like half off or something, but it was like really expensive still.
Right.
it was super like Tavarua plush, like really nice deal. Like where you go and stay, it's all inclusive, like chefs and blah, blah, blah. But we just stayed at the bottom of Revelstoke and then we went in there for one day.
Hmm.
But yeah, we did it. It was pretty rad.
That's super radical.
Yeah.
Do you have a lot of people that help you schedule that kind of stuff? You're so all over the place and kind of setting yourself up in these various parts of the world throughout the year. There's a lot of logistics that go along with that. Yeah. Has that always been easy for you to deal with? Do you have like a team around you of people that help set it up so that you can just focus on trying to win a world title?
Yeah, my dad does it for me.
Okay.
So yeah, he's kind of like my right hand man. So, and then anywhere that has like somewhere where we haven't been and we need to like Airbnb, he's not too like technologically savvy. So my wife does the Airbnb side.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is he still coaching you as well?
Yeah, he's kind of just everything now. It's like my friend, father, coach.
Does he travel with you on tour?
Yeah,
to all the events.
Last year he went to everyone except for Brazil. So yeah.
And yeah. What are those, if you don't mind me asking, like what do those conversations sound like before a contest or before a heat between you two?
He obviously knows me really good, so he knows kind of what makes me tick, I guess. Kind of a weird saying I don't really like that much, but I'll just say it. But so he just kind of like I guess tries to get me to that point where I'm surfing good, and yeah, he's really savvy with like obviously with me, but with like technique and board stuff and kind of going through the boards and you know, at a place like Margaret's, like board sizes, what sizes to ride and how that board look, how this board look. But yeah, it's been great a couple years because you know, he's like I said, he's like my best friend. We talk. That's why I was
late.
That's
rad, dude.
Yeah, no, it's the sickest ever because
a lot of people do not have that relationship with their dads.
No, I know. And I trip on it because we're like best friends. That's why I was late because I was got caught up talking to him at T-Street after I surfed because he was down there watching.
Dude, that's awesome.
So it's weird because I was like, you know, I always think like, okay, I want a son for sure, but I don't know if I'll be able to duplicate our relationship that I have with my dad. So
you can't force it.
Yeah, no, I know that for sure. But it's just like our relationship's so good. And yeah, it's just me and him, you know, going at it.
Yeah. Yeah. You like one thing that I'm 30 now. And one thing that I've noticed is if you have a family, like I'm the youngest of five,
uh-huh.
Mom, dad, like you don't just have one relationship with a family member.
Yeah.
You have many relationships with that family member throughout time.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, if I think about my relationship with my dad in high school compared to now, it's like we're two different people.
Oh, yeah.
But you just, throughout time, you get to appreciate the aspects that once annoyed you.
Yeah. No, totally. For sure. And I think that's just a big part of becoming a man or maturing or whatever. Even, you know, I'm the oldest of three and I have two younger sisters, and you know, my relationship with my sisters has gotten so much better too as like just times went on, you know. So yeah, it's rad.
Yeah, you kind of realize that there's only so much attention that you have and you don't want to focus it on fighting.
Yeah. No, yeah, for sure. That's one of it for sure. But my younger sister and I are really similar, so we get along great.
Right.
So it's cool.
And your dad was a pro surfer for a while, so he's actually talking shop with you about heats and about like board strategy and all that kind of stuff in a very educated way.
Oh yeah. It's not just like, you know, shot in the dark stuff. He knows what he's talking about for sure.
Totally.
Yeah.
You ride pretty big boards, right?
Kinda. Yeah. No. Yeah. That's, I didn't know you would know something like that.
Dude, but. I'm on it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess I would ride like close to a liter more than someone my height and weight would.
Yeah.
Would on tour, like a Federico Marias or like a Ryan Callinan would ride like 28.3 and I ride like low 29 liters. But that's just from growing up in California.
Why is that? You just want more buoyancy on flatter waves?
Yeah. Yeah.
More volume.
Yeah. I grew up surfing boards that were always bigger than all my competitors. And that's another thing for my dad, because he grew up in the 80s. He's got a big flat feet. So he likes a big fat tail and, you know, big fat nose just to glide through the flat spot. So I always grew up surfing boards like that. And, it helped with my technique a lot. So it's just kind of what I'm used to, really.
How, for people who don't know, how could a bigger board help with your technique?
Well, I think when you're younger, you just like think you want to be a little whippersnapper. You know?
Only 360s.
Yeah. And little snaps and stuff. But if you're riding a bigger board, you're not allowed to do that. You have to really like draw your turns out and, use the rail and use your legs to turn. So yeah, I still go back to it sometimes, you know, like where I'll ride like a bigger board, like a 6.1 or something, just for fun. And, yeah, it's a part of my surfing that I've kind of faded away from, just because from competing, it's so easy to, or it's not easy, but you need a lot worse wave to do a big air.
Sure.
So, you know, once I got on tour and started trying to learn how to compete at Bell's or J-Bay or Margaret's or something, then I was like, oh, I got to learn how to use my rail again and use those bigger boards and, you know, use that to my advantage.
Do you bring a bunch of boards down to the beach when you go surf most times to try and figure out which ones you like?
I brought three this morning.
Three this morning.
It was about waist high.
And will you go surf one for, like, what does that session look like?
I'm super plan or numbers orientated. So I was planning on 10 waves each board, but one of them knew, or the first two I knew earlier than that. So I put them back, and then the third one was actually the best board, and I got more waves on that board.
Did you catch 30 waves?
I didn't count, because once I was going in on seven on the first one, I was like, okay, my plan's out the window.
Right. Yeah. That's really interesting. I mean, it might be normal for you that you go out and try and calculate a session like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that most people do. And like I was looking at some of your numbers. Like, so in 2015 you got 25th on uh-huh. tour, right? In 2016 you got fourth.
Uh-huh.
And since then you've, I mean, 2018 you got 11th, 2017 7th, 2019 5th.
Yeah.
So you've had this like, you had this crazy jump up,
yeah,
right, between 2015 and 2016.
Yeah.
Do you remember like any kind of that calculated approach to learning that you took on sessions and on the way that you like approached your craft with that level of specificity that helped you jump up in the rankings like that?
Yeah. Well, I started working with this guy, named Eric Potterat, and he's kind of like a mental coach, or I don't know the exact word that he would like me to use, but, yeah, this is kind of one of those dudes. So I started working with him halfway through, or kind of towards the last quarter of 2015. And, I had some like really good results kind of right away. I had a fifth in the Azores, cause I had to requalify on the QS that year. I had a fifth in the Azores, and then I won Cash Cash. And then, I had like a ninth and a fifth in France and Portugal. And I was like, oh, this is pretty rad. So, that off season, I was just kind of went all in with him. And, he was like a really like no bullshit, not very woo woo kind of dude, because
yeah.
Sometimes those guys can be a little bit of a snake oil salesman.
Sure. Where's he from?
He's from Carlsbad, and he used to do it for the Navy SEALs. So he's pretty legit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And
he would do mental training for the Navy SEALs.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
so, amazing.
So he gave me all these techniques, you know, like focus on the things you only that you can control. And I was like, that was one thing that I was like, yeah, because I feel like I'm worrying so much about stuff that I can't control, you know, just like if there's waves or what someone else is doing or what, there's like a million things you could just go on forever. So, yeah, I really went kind of all in with him, and I started off the year with a second place at Snapper, and I was like, "Wow, this is rad.
It's working."
You know, which is great to have like instant gratification with something that you are so foreign with.
Would he go to the contests with you?
No. I think he's very like, you know, if he would be at the contest with me, everything would be too late. You know, it's got to be integrated way before that.
So when he would meet with you in California, what did those sessions look like? Would you sit down and he would just like hypnotize you, or you know, you guys doing like Wim Hof breathing, and then he's telling you about it? Like what would the session structures actually look like?
It's very like relaxed, kind of talking like we are, you know, and at first it was more of like he had a test I had to take, like this big long test of like, just so he can get a gauge and like an analysis of like how my mind works, I guess.
Do you remember what any of the questions were in the test?
No. I just remember he was like really surprised on like how like stubborn I was or something like that. So I don't remember. It was a really long test. It was like two or three different tests that were like long, just so he can get like a kind of a gauge on me. But then after that, you know, I met with him earlier this week and we just chat and talk, and I talk about issues I'm having with my family or friends or competing or in my own head about overtraining or insecurities I have about different stuff. So, but early on it was very simple, like focus on what you can control. And I was like, and then he wrote down three or four things. It was like actions, behavior, effort, and attitude. Those are like the only four things you can control.
Actions, behaviors,
effort,
attitude. And attitude.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, cool. And I like, you know, took notes, wrote it down. I was all in on it. So, and then obviously he taught me different things on how to handle my anger, because I used to, you know, there's like a, I can laugh about it now, but there's a highlight reel of me on YouTube.
I've seen it. Yeah. I'm sure we've all seen it.
Breaking my boards. Yep. So, had a couple bad ones, but, yeah, I made a vow not to do that anymore, just because there's multiple reasons why I shouldn't.
Yeah.
So he, you know, brought those to light, gave me techniques to deal with those. So, yeah. And, you know, ever since then, it's been pretty smooth sailing.
What techniques did he give you to deal with anger?
There's this technique that he used to give to the Navy SEALs, and it was like he calls it a black box technique. And it's like when something really bad happens, you know, like, so say the Navy, you know, if you're on a mission or whatever, and you have your friend who you're on a mission with and he dies right there. But you still have to complete the mission. You still have to go on and, you know, do whatever you're supposed to do. But he said that he would try to teach them to just put those emotions that he had right there and just put it in a black box. And then once the mission was done, to deal with it then, or open the box then. So with surfing, it's funny because once I learned that technique, I was like, once I would go and deal with my emotions that I had, I would realize that, you know, my life's really good and I would never have that sort of angst or anger or feeling to break anything or yell and scream at anyone.
it's cool how the way that the human mind works is, if we can create an image in it, it can really powerfully help us literally, or I don't know, it's not literally, metaphorically box emotions into a place.
Yeah.
Right? Like those, like creating those kinds of imagination palaces, right?
Yeah.
In your mind can be really, really powerful. So for you, if you would feel like some level of anxiety or, you know, emotional spin out, would you think to yourself, all right, I'm going to put this in the black box until later?
Yeah. Well, one thing that he mentioned that was like a big part of it was like, hey, if you want to do that, that's fine, because I get it. You want to win really bad and you're a stubborn competitor or whatever. And it's you run hot and you have a lot of passion, and it, it makes sense that you want to break something, and your surfboard's the only thing right there. So, but it's really, really bad to do it in front of everyone. So if you're going to do it later. So,
yeah.
And then I would, and then
in a room full of pillows.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So once I was like, because, and he gave me, you know, X, Y, Z, a million reasons why. And then once I learned that, and to go and do it later or deal with it later, I would be like, oh, like, you know, I just lost the heat. Like it's all good. It's kind of, it's all part of that up and down, that staying even keeled, not living and dying by every result. It's all part of that same thing. So, yeah, it was a great tool for
sure. That's really cool.
Yeah.
The four behaviors you said, so it's actions, attitude,
behavior,
effort.
Yeah.
When you would go to a place like, let's use Snapper as this example, right? Where you got second right after you're working with this guy.
Uh-huh.
Did you have any kind of notebook or any way to implement those tactics into a real life situation at that contest?
Yeah. I mean, I just like wrote it down. I have a notebook, that I fill up. I kind of fill one up a year. But I've only been doing that for the last couple of years. But when I first had it, I just had it written down in my phone or something. And, yeah, it was huge for me because I was always like worried about who's surfing good in the free surfs and how am I surfing compared to that? And just all this weird stuff that doesn't matter at all. So,
and that you don't have control over.
Yeah, exactly. And it's weird because it's implemented into everything in life too. Now that I look at it, holistically, I guess, because I catch myself a lot worrying about things I can't control. Like, you know, what your friends are doing that ticks you off or whatever, you know, the wind or the swell forecast, or, you know, a million different things. So it's just like, why do you, you know, doesn't matter at all. It's just worry about yourself.
Hmm. And will you focus then on, like, let's say one thing that you can control, right, is the amount of sleep that you get in a night, right?
Yeah.
Will you then refocus your attention onto those things that you can control consciously?
Well, one thing you can't control is the past too.
Ooh.
So if you don't get the proper amount of sleep, then you can't be pissed off, you know? So, but yeah, I mean, just like I guess when I'd feel angsty or feel a little bit weird, I'd be like, okay, well, is it actions? How am I acting? How am I being? Is it my behavior? How am I behaving around everyone? Blah, blah, blah. My effort. Am I trying hard? And my attitude. Am I happy? Am I, you know, looking at things through a good lens. And if it didn't fall into that category, then it would immediately just like go away, you know, just be like,
goes in the black box.
Well, no, no, it just goes in the air.
Goes in the clouds. Yeah. Disintegrates.
Yeah, exactly. So
do you write down, in your notebook after a contest, like notes on things that you did well or didn't do well?
Yeah. More, it was really board based to keep track of my boards.
Huh.
Because sometimes, you know, thankfully I get so many boards. I'll be like, oh, that one board, I really like that one board, you know,
what was it again?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll have the number or something, you know? So, or like, yeah, that one board worked kind of bad at lowers, but I wanted to try it at some hollower waves, but I just gave it back. And then, you know, so it was just a way for me to organize my life, really.
Did you bring the notebook down today when you surfed T Street?
No, I haven't really been notebooking too much. Okay. Because, yeah, no tour. So,
right.
Yeah. I actually have a lot of boards that aren't Mayhems just because there was no tour this year. So I kind of like went all in on like just trying other boards just for fun and to see what else was going on under other people's feet.
And that's fine with Matt.
Yeah. I mean, I'll never like post anything or, you know, it was pretty low key. So
sure. But just to be able to, he wants you to be surfing as well as you can. So if you can learn something from a different shape.
Yeah. And then there's a couple of guys where he was like, you should order some of his so I can like see what's going on.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
I did a pod with Kai Lenny and he said that he also has a notebook and after every big wave session, he'll write down in that notebook, like everything that he feels that he did well, could have done better, boards, strategy, so that he, again, just so that he can go back to it, because he could be out at a spot like Mavericks and then not go back there for another year and forget all of those lessons.
Yeah, it's pretty, that's super true. Like, yeah, I'll write things down. Like, you know, one thing that I wrote down for Margaret's last year, even though I did, made the final, did good. I wrote down like, need a windy wave shortboard. Like, because I felt like that was kind of a gap that I had in my quiver going there last year, because of the waves were like shortboardable, but I was riding a 6.1 just because it was so windy. It was like I wanted a little bit more board to kind of weigh me down. So, that's definitely something that you do, because you go through, you know, 10 or 12 events in a year and you're like, you forget about the ones earlier. And so you can go back to it and see what worked good.
How many boards are you traveling with to each event?
Somewhere like Snapper, I would go, if it was solely a Snapper event, I would go there with like 9 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
But somewhere like Margaret's, I would go with like closer to 15 or something, because you need longer boards.
And how many are you getting throughout a year?
I think I got like close to 150 last year. It was crazy.
Dude, it's your thing.
Yeah.
You're trying to win a world title.
Yeah,
and
totally.
You finished fifth this last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you need to be sheepish about that.
Yeah.
You're not like some surf bum who's like blowing his, like, you know, the wife's like, honey, you can't be spending more money on surfboards. You're a plumber. And he's like, but I need a windy wave shortboard.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're going for a fucking world title, man, and you're getting pretty close.
Thanks.
So you can get that one off of your shit. It's okay, Chloe. It's okay.
Yeah.
We just want to see you surf as well as possible, whatever that's going to be.
Yeah.
It's going to make it happen.
Yeah. So, but I get a lot of boards for sure.
You have been, you know, in the spotlight competing for such a damn long time. And then a global pandemic just rolls around.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're on the Olympic team for the first time. Like, what's it like psychologically to have your entire focus for most of your life now be, you now have to reorient in such a fundamental way. Like, you don't know we don't know when the tour is going to come back.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, they're planning on December. We'll see.
We'll see.
Yeah. You know, a lot of different stuff going on.
It's a big, we'll see.
Yeah. So I think, for me, it was a trip in the beginning, because, you know, I was gearing up for the year and I had like an injury. So it was kind of like a weird time. And then like, so somewhere in the back of my mind, I was like, you know, with my injury, cause I had like a LCL and a MCL kind of thing. I was kind of like, oh, it's kind of nice to have a break in the beginning. And then I was just like, wow, I'm here. And I'm like, you know, usually when I'm home, I'm like super militant with like training and surfing. And like, I'm home for 10 days and it's like, bang, 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 got to get ready for the next event. And I'm excited to be home to hang out with everyone, but I'm like doing all my deal. But then I was just like, there's just no events. And like, do I train or like, do I surf a lot hard, or there's nothing to get ready for? Like, when's the tour going to start? So it was a trip, and it made me realize, you know, like one of those, like I told you earlier, made me realize I'm a human being. I'm not a competitor. You know, I have a life other than competitive surfing. So it was super weird. And then, I actually got injured again. And then I was like, wow, this is trippy. You know, what a trippy year for me, because I'll be at the Olympics now and now I'm injured and it's just weird. And then once I got back, I was like, I went to Indo for 2 months and, just scored waves. And I was like, oh my gosh, like on the totem pole of like my priorities, like, okay, I'm a human being. And like, I went from like competitor being above surfing, but now surfing's above being a competitor. And I'm just like getting barreled is just like, it's the best thing in the world. Like, why wouldn't, you know, I feel so blessed to be at an age where I can get barreled. And like, I just started thinking of all this like grateful stuff on that fall under that surfer category. So
when did you take that trip?
I went, I left, October?
It's October now.
Yeah, I think 2 months ago. What was it 2 months ago?
That was
September?
August. August was 2 months ago.
Yeah, August 25th I left, and I got home October 23rd or something.
Where'd you go?
We went on a 22-day boat trip right when we first got there.
Whoa.
Yeah.
In the Mentwise?
Yeah, in the Mentwise.
22 days.
Yeah. And then after that, we went to Bali for a week. Then after that, we went to Yo-Yo's area for a week. Then
yeah, that's a fun spot.
Yeah, it's cool. Really pretty. It was rad.
And then Lakeys?
And then Lakeys for a week, and then back to Bali for a week.
God, so fun.
Yeah.
So fun. And you scored in the Mentwise?
We scored with just like me and my best friends, like no one out, because we were super early on getting there once they had the business visas that you could buy.
Right.
So we were like one of the first boats to get out there, and we were just like mostly surfing by ourselves.
That's crazy, man. Can you imagine? I mean, you were out there.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing a couple photos come out right in the early pandemic days of guys who were camp managers at HTs getting just perfect waves by themselves.
Yeah.
It's like going back in time.
Yeah.
It's like those early, you know, the earliest boat trips out there. It's like you got a little slice of what it was like to do, the Indian, what's the famous boat that all
Indies,
the Indies Trader. Yeah. You guys were like the Indies Trader one.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. But even luckier, because they didn't have Greenbush. They didn't have Rags Right. They didn't have the Thunder Box, which is on the backside of Thunder. It was like, and we scored all those waves by ourselves. So this is, yeah.
Only boat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Only like at Greenbush.
At Greenbush, there was a couple other boats, but it was pretty heavy. So it was kind of, there was like one core lord dude, like from South Africa, like getting drained, which was rad. But other than that, yeah, there was like 3 hours was just us out.
Wow.
Yeah. And yeah, it was one of those things where you're like, why do I deserve this? You know, competitive surfing is not everything in life. And, you know, watch out around the corner, because I feel like there might be a tornado.
Yeah.
Because it's so special. It's like, you know, like something bad's got to happen soon.
Isn't it funny how hard it is to enjoy things?
Yeah, it's weird. It's super weird.
The second you feel like you're there, you're like, okay, when's the other shoe going to drop? Yeah,
exactly.
And then you make the other shoe drop in your mind because you like will it into being.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So it was rad for sure. I was, it was cool. So that's kind of how I guess to answer your question, how I've been dealing with everything, but,
going on boat trips to Indo.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, now it sounds like they might start in December. So I'm a little carrot dangled in front of me. So I'm just trying to get ready for that if it happens.
And what does that look like? The way that I was thinking about it is like, if you're a fighter, you're in camp and you want to peak when the fight happens.
Yeah.
You don't want to peak too early.
Yeah.
So are you thinking about that when you're getting back into training, that you want to keep that like, you want to just be ascending at the right moment when the competitions start?
Well, there's a little bit of that, because I've done really good in some events where I've been injured leading up to the event. So I wasn't surfing at all. And then I was just really excited just to be there and be surfing. So there is a little bit of that where you don't want to burn out, but I don't know. I'm so young and I love surfing so much. Like it's really, I don't ever see myself right now, like, burning out or being like not excited to be there. So I don't know. I think it's hard because competitive surfing or competing or being an athlete or whatever is there's steps that'll get you somewhere, but I don't know if those same steps get you to the next level. So yeah, for me, I feel like I want to surf really loose because that's when I'm surfing my best. In order to be that, I got to be light as I can. And
physically?
Like weight-wise.
Weight-wise?
Yeah.
How much do you weigh?
I weigh 177, 175 right now. And last year during the events, I weighed like between 165 and 170. So if I could be that during the events, I'll be stoked. And just injury-free and eating right and because I've dealt with a lot. I've dealt with overtraining a lot, and that's why I have kind of ongoing back issues where I'll be too hard-headed and just training too much and not eating enough, and then my back will go. And I was thinking about it the other day. I was like, man, if this happens a couple more times, I might need back surgery, or I won't be able to surf when I'm 35 or 40 and this and that. I was like, man, I gotta look at my training a lot more holistically. So yeah, I'm just doing stuff to be light, you know.
That's kind of it.
Yeah.
Do you ever look at what Slater's done, just given his longevity of health and high surfing ability? Or do you think that he's just such an anomaly, you can't really look at what he's doing?
I think he's definitely an anomaly, and I think if he's doing anything, no one knows about it. So we'll just make up myths of him drinking like bat blood or something.
For sure. Oh yeah, in a closet, like bat blood, praying to the Dark Lord Voldemort. It's just giving him dark magical powers.
Yeah, yeah. He's a trip, because I'm just like so thankful to be in this place in my life where I'm at. And then I went on a trip with him last year to Japan for that ISA World Games, and he was trying so hard and he was ripping so hard. And he's like, however old he was 47. He was 47 or 8 then. And he was like trying in this ISA against like Germany people and like, you know, people I've never heard of. And then like Gabriel's in his heat too. It's like 4-man heat. And he's like trying so hard to beat Gabriel. And he like does a 4 rotation at the end of the heat and beats him. Like, I mean, I don't know how many people are watching that event, but he was ripping so hard. And I was like, after that trip, I was just like, I just bow to this guy. Like he's just the man. Like I don't see myself doing that. Like I see myself doing 3 Olympic games and then I'll retire, and that'll put me at 34 or 5 or 6, somewhere around there. And like he's like 12 years older than that, trying to beat Gabriel in 1-foot slop in Japan on the event that no one's watching, and it has nothing to do with the world title. It was just crazy.
That is crazy, man. What a cool experience to get to, you know, be one yourself and also be around the best surfers in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's and like that's a good point, because before that, I just kind of looked at him as kind of a competitor and someone I looked up to, but he's kind of like tricky to get a read on around the competitors area. But then I was just there, and like he was rooting for me, and because we were like trying to win the team gold. And it was just rad. It was just sick. And I was just like, this guy is just, he's gnarlier than Michael Jordan or Tom Brady or Bo Jackson, whatever, whoever. He's just gnarlier than anyone. And I was just like.
And he's rooting for you.
Yeah, yeah. And it was crazy. It was wild. I mean, not only that, but just how his effort level was just like, this is psycho.
Wow. So that's great, man. Is there anything, you know, moving forward into this year psychologically that you are really focused on? You said being loose. Is there anything else that, like, as you said, there's things you can do that can get you to a certain level.
Yeah.
And then there's things you can do to try and get to that next level.
Yeah.
You've been well within a reach of a world title for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Are you looking at that next goal any differently? In terms of your approach in that.
Well, yeah. I mean, last year was like I would put it as like a David Goggins year for me. It was just crazy, like training so much and waking up at obscure times to go train.
I saw you sprinting in your Instagram videos, like, don't bitch out. Yeah, yeah. Gotta go further.
Basically.
Harder. Goggins, read my book.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I don't like that part of him too much, because he's very Instagram orientated, but I'm not at all.
Oh, he's a badass.
But he's a badass, and he's like, you know, all about pain makes you a better person or whatever. But yeah, so that was kind of my year last year. And then it kind of, at the end of the year, though, I had this crazy back injury where I was like, I couldn't walk and like all this stuff. And it was from overtraining and surfing too much. And I mean, to think about it, but in the off season and when I was at home and around events, this is what I was doing. I was dedicating 4 hours of the day into the water, and then at least 2 hours a day of training. So it was 6 hours a day every single day. And it was like, at the end of the year, my back just went sideways, and I was like, it really messed me up. And I had a crazy amount of gratitude for me to stay in in the tidal race going into pipe with barely free surfing through Europe or around the wave pool. So it was a bunch of different learning curves and sort of things. So I just want to know myself as far as what makes me surf good. And that's being light and loose and whippy, because I try to surf like Mick Fanning, and he surfs really loose. So that's my guy. So once I start getting older and I can't surf that way, then my surfing will go, you know, out the window. So that's it. That's one of the things. And then also just making sure I'm injury. Sorry.
No worries. We can finish up.
Making
right here.
Sure I'm injury free. So that's a big part of it. And also as far as the ebbs and flows of competing, not living and dying by any event, like I said, being grateful, you know, sometimes it makes me want to cry because I have like finished fifth in the world and I'm in the Olympics. Like, it's just like, it's crazy to think about, because there's so many people around me that just, you know, are just living a normal life, or, you know, they want what I have from being a pro surfer aspect. So it's just like, wow. Like I set these goals in the beginning of the year. I said, hey, I want to make the Olympics. I want to win the world title. And in order to do that, I got to win an event. And, or no, I wanted to be in the title race going into pipe, and I wanted to win an event. And I did two out of those three goals. And I was like, that's insane. Like, I need to be really, really fucking happy.
Yeah.
So I just want to surf from that kind of point of view. So, yeah.
Man, well, I'm a fan. I remember very early on driving down to NSSA contests when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
With Nat and Rosie Young.
Yeah.
And you were already a famous young surfer by the time you were 10 years old. And to see you make it through that amount of attention through your whole life.
Yeah.
And come out now a top five surfer in the world with an attitude of gratitude and desire to know yourself better is really fucking cool, man.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the tour will kick your ass and make you look in the mirror.
Yeah.
Last time I checked, those work, you know.
Well, so, thank you so much for your time, man. We will watching whenever the tour starts up again.
Yeah, it was great to chat.
That's our show. I'm going to play you out the song called Cigarettes in Summer by Mount St. Ilias. They listened to the podcast. They sent me some music. If you are a musician and you want your music played, at the end of this podcast, you can email it to info@kyle.surf. info@kyle.surf is also where you can send voice memos. Just let me know who you are, where you're listening from, and please include your Instagram handle if you want to connect with other podcast listeners. Thank you to the Nell Newman Foundation, RPM Training, and Santa Cruz Medicinals for supporting this podcast. You can go to rpmtraining.com or santacruzmedicinals.com, type in the code name Kyle10 and get 10% off any order. Don't forget, we have our book club. You can click the link below, kyle.surf/book club. And finally, if you would like to check out my writing, which I do just about every day, release articles just about every week, you can head over to my website, tierman.substack.com, or click the link below to check out my stories. My most recent one is about my hometown break, Steamer Lane. So it's about a 5-minute read, and I hope that you enjoy it. Just click the link below, tierman.substack.com. And with that, get out in the water, whatever body of water you are closest to. I hope that you enjoy this song called Cigarettes in Summer by Mount St. Ilias.
Walking out among the horizon, came upon a place where the past was in hiding. Ten thousand little worlds hung like grapes on the vine. picture my surprise when I put one to my eye and a day gone by was living out its life inside. If a day ever was up there, it still is. Yes, it's less than logical. What was plus what if? A day never died, it just changed to 3, 4 time. 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 Now I am 17, cheap guitar in the suburbs. I am 18, cigarettes in summer. I am every day of my life at the same time. Now I am in a world where the sun has not yet set. I am in a world where she has not yet left. To light the ships I pass.